The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 499, recorded on April 2nd,
499th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 332nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
You know, I was looking at gaming laptops and I found a review for the Acer Predator 21X. It costs $9,000.
Oh, wow. Forget that.
It's more than a car. Can you imagine?
Does it control cars remotely? Like, what does it do for $9,000?
21-inch screen, 2.9 gigahertz Intel Core i7, 64 gigabytes of DDR4 SRAM memory. It has a GTX 1080 in it.
This doesn't sound worth $9,000.
It has two half a terabyte SSD hard drives and a half a terabyte hard drive. And of course,
a lot of space and memory. It's really expensive. But, like, wow. Talk about not cost effective.
Hey, you know, I'm looking at a picture. It comes with, part of that comes with a really nice case. It's like 8 inches thick with padding. So it's like a suitcase.
Wow.
And it weighs 18.5 pounds. So
yeah, that's way overpriced.
I mean, if you had a $9,000 laptop, you would want a suitcase that if you dropped it, it would survive a two-story fall.
I wonder how much it costs for the warranty. If it gets a scratch, you have to get it replaced. Looks really nice, but $9,000? Jesus.
I'll stay with my desktop, thanks.
My desktop cost $900. It cost a tenth of that amount.
Yeah,
My Alienware costed about $1,200, and it served me for about 6 years.
Yeah, mine served me for about the same amount of time. It needs to be replaced soon. And I'm considering getting a laptop. That's why I'm looking through these, but I can't afford anything right now. But, you know, I saw one gaming laptop with a really nice card for $700, and it was an Intel. And I'm looking for AMD because they have the same... They have the same power, but a lot less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So my main deal is I want to get a lot of hard drive space. That's my main concern. Because here's the thing. If I have a laptop, I can have keep talking and nobody explodes on the go. Because I printed out the manual. And, you know, I'm itching to play that with somebody.
Yeah.
Which reminds me... Okay. There's a news item that we're not going to talk about, or at least do a full conversation of, but Valve has basically put the Steam machine in the grave, and part of the reason is that they kneecapped their own Steam machine by doing the Steam Link, which basically does what the Steam machine does, except it streams it instead of having a box.
Yeah, but you need a really good net connection for that Steam Link to work. I bought one myself when it was on sale for like $2, and I tried to stream Ori because I thought Ori would be easy, but it just froze up. So you need to directly plug in the internet to the computer for it to work because it just didn't stream very well at all.
You don't want to stream something twice. And I still see no need to play my PC on my 4K TV. I have no reason for that.
I mean, the whole idea was that Steambox was going to be this thing that was like a completely customizable experience where you had Steam boxes that were just like very light things for the average consumer, and then you had at some point I do believe there was a prototype for a couch Steam box.
And, you know, it was also supposed to be Linux, and they found, oh, well, we might as well include Windows, too.
It's very easy just to connect an HDMI cable to your TV, to your computer, and sit on the couch with a wireless mouse and keyboard.
It really very is. Very easy. Like, I've done that with my laptop several times, and, like, it is not that hard to do what Steambox was trying to do. Right. So I don't know. It's one of those things where occasionally people come up with ideas that already exist and nobody says anything, and so they just keep going with it until it turns into something like this.
Like Steam VR?
Mm-hmm.
Except now they just offer HTC Vive.
Like, you got these dudes that are like people in a similar fashion being like, what if we had sort of like this crazy cool contraption for public transit where you could move all sorts of people around on the road? Oh, you mean like a bus? No, it's no.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It just seemed interesting to me because Atari saying it's going to play modern games.
Yeah, but the thing about that is it might have its own games, you know.
Yeah, I would hope so.
You know, hey, Valve, you know, if you're going to make the Steam box, you know what you could have sold it? Say, with every Steam box comes a proprietary copy of Half-Life 3 episode 2, episode 3. How many people would buy the stupid Steam box just to say, hey, guess what? I can finally play Half-Life 2 episode 3.
Yeah, if they could have been over their fears and just like pull the trigger on that game and then made it like an exclusive for their little Steam box, everybody would have bought one. Everybody.
Yeah. But, you know, Valve doesn't play games anymore. They have something else that makes more money.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And what's ironic is that I pre-ordered Half-Life 2, which, you know, forced me to download Steam because it was only being released on Steam. Which is fine, you know, but I'm one of the earliest Steam adopters, therefore.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought the $150 version of Half-Life 2. I still have those postcards that come with it. That came with it.
Neat.
Yeah, I haven't played Half-Life 2 in ages.
You actually paid for 3 episodes, is what you're saying?
No, it only came with Half-Life 2. But it came with a lot of other stuff. It came with a physical copy that was sent later. Came with manuals. It came with all sorts of stuff. And I remember it also came with those. It came with a poster, and it came with some postcards.
Hmm. That does sound cool.
So, anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
I was at a retro gaming event this last weekend, and it was called Score Wars. It was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The whole thing was put at this art installation called Meow Wolf, and they... yeah,
that is so... Oh, God. Meow Wolf, that is so, millennial anime-esque.
It was a pretty cool place.
That was what you were posting about on Twitter with TJ, and what was it? I think there was, there's a couple of those, like a BJ or DJ or something.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember that one.
Right, he had too much beer. He can't remember much when he goes to these.
Yeah.
I actually didn't drink much. I was too busy working. But it was a crazy event. Basically, they built an entire 80s style neon-filled arcade exhibit. They got a bunch of legacy retro gaming champions together in one room to sort of beat their own records. Donald Hayes played a 10-hour session of Centipede and put up like millions and millions of points and beat it. It was 7 million something over a 10-hour session.
That reminds
of Centipede.
Me of another news item that I wasn't going to use. And remember that guy we profiled before? Ninja, who was making millions of dollars or whatever.
Uh-huh.
He dropped the N-word, and it isn't quite like PewDiePie, but he's still in hot water because he can't explain why he said it.
Yeah. But there was a lot of records set by some of these retro gaming guys, but the big event there was a Galaga tournament. They had all the best Galaga players. They brought together some of the best Galaga players they could find, and it was like a head-to-head knockout tournament. It was crazy. It was cool. For me, like, they had a bunch of arcades there on free play, and the one that I kept going back to was Discs of Tron.
Oh, yeah. Wait, but which cabinet? Was it the big cabinet in which you sit down in, or was it just the regular cabinet?
It was the stand-up cabinet with the joystick and the wheel.
Oh, that sucks, because the better Discs of Tron cabinet was the one in which you got inside with twin speakers, so you had surround sound, and it was like being in your own little pod while you played.
I don't think I could have dealt with that, because Sark pisses me off when I'm losing.
You know, I remember way back in the day, they actually had free play in a local arcade because the game had just been released for Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
I played that over and over and over again. I got really good at it, too.
But for those who don't know what Discs of Tron is, it's essentially...
You're throwing discs at each other, okay? And you have to use angles. You have to bounce it off the walls because if you try and attack them directly, they're just going to dodge it. So you have to make these weird angles. And later in the game, the discs that you have to hop up and down on start to move. You can shoot the discs out from under people. Obstacles get in the way, so you just have to start doing more bouncy, and then you have the ability to raise or lower your disc angle. So you can do not only bounce off the walls, but bounce it off the ceiling. And that's basically all it was, is just basically throwing discs at each other.
It's Disc Jammers, but Tron. Disc Jammers. At one point, I actually had a good run, and I put up a 58,000-point score, which is, for Touring Galaxies, the fifth place holder has a 54,000-point score. I didn't have anything on hand to record what I was doing, so it was all unofficial, but in my heart, I'm fifth place in the world at Discs of Tron.
That's the one I saw on Twitter.
You could just tell them, hey, check out my score.
Nah, I can't. It wouldn't work that way.
You just photograph it. Everybody has a cell phone now.
But
it's on Twitter.
They're super duper stringent about, like, for most arcade submissions, you have to have a video of it happening, and then in the same video, you have to get a look at the circuit board to make sure that everything is legit. And unfortunately, I didn't have any recording equipment on hand and didn't think to let anyone know to come over with a phone when I was doing that. So whatever. I had an awesome run of the game, and I recorded an awesome event. Lots of people playing crazy cool Galaga. It was good.
All that matters is you had fun.
I usually get drawn to Dragon's Lair and Space Ace because I was a master at those games, but also, unfortunately, as those games age, there starts to get a lag, so you don't have the same responsiveness anymore.
I played a Dragon's Lair recently. That's exactly what happened when I was trying to play it. There was an extreme, like, maybe 2 to 3 seconds of just stillness while I waited for the because it's on a laser disc. Those games were built on a laser disc player, and so it took about 3 seconds for the next scene to load.
So it isn't that. It's that the actual QuickTime events are lagged because of the age of the machine. You know.
Yeah, but the entire machine, like the Dragon's Lair arcade machines, are built on a laser disc player.
You know, people would surround me because I would play.
And the laser disc doesn't play as well.
I would beat the game on one life. And I was that good at it, and then I started beating Space Ace on Space Ace difficulty on one life.
See, that's impressive. That's a lot of memory, and I applaud you for that.
I can't even do it on the... I have it on the Xbox One, Dragon's Lair, and I can't do it anymore because I can't do quick time events like that anymore. I mean, I can always learn how to do it again, but, you know, there's no
need to. Really worth it.
But, you know, just the music as you do the space battle scene in Space Ace is just fantastic.
See, like, and the thing about that is that you had the skill at one point, but at this point, like, who would you be trying to prove anything to?
That's the music of Dexter turning into Ace.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, that's just buried in my brain. So I just got an invite to to attend a screening of Ready Player One. Has anybody seen that?
No. I had friends. I have pretty much all my friends at this point have seen it, and I keep hearing varying results.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that's the most common is that it's predictable. The second the movie starts, you know where it's going to go and how it's going to end.
It's also a 2.5-hour movie.
Yeah, and the last 30 minutes of it is gooey Steven Spielberg schmaltz about how you should go outside and not play games.
Thank you for spoiling.
Well, I'm not spoiling anything, because...
That was spoiling it, Jonah, thank you.
Not really. No, it's just the message of the film. It's a movie about virtual reality. You knew that message was coming.
Talk about it. Fine, whatever.
I haven't seen it, by the way. I just know that's what happens at the end.
I haven't seen it either. I don't want spoilers.
It's not a spoiler. It's just a tone.
You just said it ended with a Spielberg schmaltzy go outside and don't. So it's an anti-technology message.
I didn't say it was anti-technology. I just said it's a schmaltzy ending. But it's Steven Spielberg. You should expect that from that by now.
I didn't even know it was Spielberg.
It was Steven Spielberg. It's not a spoiler to say who the director is.
See, now, Steven Spielberg directing it is not a spoiler.
One of these days, Sona, you need to see a movie where all you know is the title, and you know nothing about it.
Oh, I did. I went to see The Death of Stalin, and all I knew was the title.
Zero.
I went to see The Death of Stalin, and all I knew was the title. All I knew was the death of... And it was a black comedy. That's all I knew. Of course, I knew the surrounding thing about Russia at the time. Here's a spoiler in The Death of Stalin. Stalin dies.
Oh no! How could you?
You know, if I
now
said,
now I don't want to see it.
Oh yes, you do. It is the Suicide Squad for the Brainy set. It is so fast paced and so darkly funny. You have to see it. And Jeffrey Tambor is hilarious. Jeffrey Tambor plays Malenkov, and all he cares about is his image. As all this political, all he cares about is how he looks.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeffrey Tambor is wearing a ridiculous wig too. It's worth seeing the movie alone to see Jeffrey Tambor wearing that wig.
I will say this: if you're still thinking about that Ready Player One screening, I've heard that the first hour is kind of boring, and then it picks up and gets enjoyable. If you're just going in to have some fun.
Actually, I heard that it was ripping off an episode of a Cartoon Network thing. What was the name of that cartoon? Hello, Danny? Or something?
I don't know.
Oh, God.
All I know is that the second half of the movie is apparently where it picks up and gets pretty fun.
I forgot the name of it. But yeah, Danny Phantom. It's the entire movie is a ripoff of a Danny Phantom episode.
I don't know.
In which he goes inside a computer, and everything that happens in that cartoon happens in Ready Player One. Keep in mind, Ready Player One is based on a young adult book, so...
Yes.
They've been calling it the Harry Potter for adults.
Ugh.
Harry Potter is for adults. Whatever.
No, I'm saying ugh to that idea, because it is not that.
Yeah.
Well, they're from people who've actually seen it, so I can't say if they're wrong or not.
Oh yeah, I fucking love that part in Harry Potter where they meet the Goonies and fucking Iron Giant and they all fight each other. Whatever.
Yeah, the Iron Giant appears in it, and I know that from the trailer. And it makes me wonder, who is this film made for? Because here's the thing, the Goonies and the Iron Giant, only guys in their 40s are going to remember that.
Yeah, that's right on the head. It is a movie and a book.
It's made like a movie for 14-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Yes, also true.
And if you're in your 40s, you already know where the movie's going to go.
True.
It's just, And here, hint to Steven Spielberg, gamers don't want to hear go outside and leave your computer alone. They're not going to do that.
I it sounds to me like you're trying to talk yourself out of this, Jonah. You should go see it
for free. Yeah. It's like, you know, but I don't need a 70-year-old man telling me how to spend my I know the world is beautiful. Fuck you. I go into the world. Guess what? I go out into the world and I play video games at the same time. And I've never had the urge to gun down people with an assault rifle.
Whoa, how did we jump to that? That quickly.
So anyways, what have you been playing, Scott, since we went all the way off top? Well, it's my fault. I started talking about getting an invite to see Ready Player One. Although, yeah, you know, since it's a movie about VR gaming, I guess it is germane to the podcast.
Yeah, sure. That'll work. That's the connective tissue.
Yeah, so yeah. Have you been playing any VR games?
No, I don't have the money to drop on VR equipment that's at this point kind of seeming almost it hasn't caught on enough for me to spend money on that, so no VR. But I have
will say
money.
Though, by the way, before you go on, when I got Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, it automatically downloaded mm-hmm. a VR version of that.
Cool.
So I can guess you can inspect the bomb in three dimensions in front of your face.
I will put out this one counterpoint. Moss is out for PSVR, and it is adorbs.
That is cool, but that's one game. I need more.
I know.
The undead side scroller that I still haven't played it in VR, but when I did at E3, it was fantastic. And I think VR works best when you're playing it like there's something on a table. You know, it's like
yeah.
You're not first person. It's basically I'm just gonna see this as a like it's on a table. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
Like I said, Minecraft, and I think you could still play Minecraft with VR, but I really don't know how it would handle stuff like flying in Elytra, where you have to jump and then use a rocket to keep going. It feels like it would be very involved, and you would need more than just motion capture. You would need buttons or something.
It would be just as good as mobile version of Minecraft.
Oh God! So yeah, I'm just building some stuff in Minecraft when I have the time to game at all right now. I've been kind of busy with other stuff.
I'm surprised you haven't been playing Far Cry 5, TJ.
I have no interest.
Really? Because everybody's been talking about it.
From the get-go, I had bad vibes about that game, and they were confirmed by a few of my friends.
Wait, what bad vibes?
That it goes for a message and just completely misses it.
Oh, I don't care about that. I just care that you can have a bear companion.
That is cool. dog named Boomer and bear named Cheeseburger are neat and awesome, and I love them.
It's Far Cry. You know, Far Cry has had the same gameplay over and over and over again. You're in an open world, and you have to take over bases. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to sit through about 30 hours of Hollow Message to do that.
Actually, you know what? And we're going to have a spoiler for a news item that's coming up. It does have the same fantastic Far Cry editor, and that's what I'm interested in.
Oh, yeah. The level editor is apparently pretty awesome.
Yeah, and that's what I would get Far Cry 5 for. Because here's the thing. When I played Far Cry 2, I hated having to always constantly deal with my malaria, and every time I walked, no matter who was on the road, they would stop everything and just attack. It's like, oh, we're really – oh, wait, there he is. Let's get him. He's on our side, but yeah. We don't care.
See, my opinion is that Far Cry 2 was the last Far Cry that really mattered.
I haven't played 3 and 4, though.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about 3 and 4, but Far Cry 2 – when my partners died, I was really, really upset about it. And that's not even a story in the game. That's just something that can happen.
Oh,
and
I just
like
to play State of Decay 2, and that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Little Tamagotchi people die.
But like Far Cry 2, you have these partners that you can that each have like a specialty to them, and you can bring them out into the world on your missions together, and you guys go hunt diamonds down, and you build a camaraderie, and it feels so cool.
I hated doing the diamond thing. Such a bore.
But you're doing it with a cool guy, and it's like you're like Indiana Jones and I don't know Indiana Jones's friend. But it was cool up until the point where your friend died, and didn't just die. You have to walk up to him and make the decision of, are you just going to let him die in a field, or are you going to shoot him and put him out of his misery like a sick dog? And that was like the most emotionally crippling for little TJ.
Anyways. Wait, how old were you? 13, 14?
When did Far Cry 2 come out?
It came out in 2008.
Yeah, so that would have meant I was 20. So I guess not too little, but yeah.
Well, if you were drinking beer, then you weren't little.
Yeah.
You have to admit to underage drinking. That's okay.
It was still one of the most impactful things that I remember in a video game in that era.
Right. So as for me, there was a couple of free games on Xbox Live Marketplace, so I started playing The Witness. And it's okay. I'm just doing it to get the achievements. And I was playing a little bit of Trials Fusion, and it was frustrating. It's frustrating in the good way. It's like, yeah, I can pass the level, but damn it, I want the gold medal. And my Gamefly is sending me South Park, The Fractured Butthole.
Oh, nice.
So we'll see how that is. I never did complete The Stick of Truth, so. Not that it one has anything to do with the other, because this one's about superheroes now.
I know you have it in your Steam library. Did you ever play Inside?
I don't have it on my Steam library.
Oh, I thought you got it.
No, I have Limbo on my... No, I'm planning on getting it at some point, but I still haven't played Inside yet.
Ah.
But
what do you think of The Witness so far? Did you know anything about it?
I mean, I knew it was a puzzle game. I went knowing fully that it was a full puzzle game, a full puzzle exploration game. And it's nice looking, but I don't know if I would have wanted to spend any money on it.
We lost Scott.
Actually, the puzzle game that I'm enjoying more is Mini Metro, in which it's a thing in which you have to build connections, basically building a subway. And, recording started. Okay, well, TJ's recording this.
I've got it, yes.
Okay, so we'll see. And the other game that I've been playing is Flashpoint Fire Rescue. Now, I don't know if you know the board game, which is a co-op board game, sort of like the firefighter version of Pandemic, except this time you're in a burning building and trying to rescue people. And God, it's hard. I had to rework my brain to figure out how to play, because I'm in the pandemic mode, but in this game it's a little different. So I finally rescued the 7 people. One person died, and the house was 4 hits from collapsing. But I finally made it through. But that was only the first part. There are more modes, and I played on basic mode without the specialized firefighters. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I have Far Cry and Far Cry 2 on my Steam list that I could install if I want to. The first Far Cry was okay. Far Cry 2 is better, but I want better sniper rifles. And I heard the sniper rifles are better in 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, but at the cost of cool moments.
No, apparently in Far Cry 4, the game, as Yahtzee said, the game will randomly roll the die and have an eagle attack you and say, which of your eyes do you feel you don't need as much? I haven't finished Bastion either. I really should finish that.
Bastion is a good game.
It's an excellent game.
Yeah. I did not realize I had Endless Space on my Steam list. And I know Endless Space 2 is out there.
Pretty good games. I like what that developer does with storytelling when it comes to 4X games. Because I know that Civilization is the golden standard, but you kind of just make your own story in Civilization. I liked that in Endless Legend, Endless Space, and Endless Space 2, it kind of had a narrative playing out depending on which race you were as you're continuing to play.
Hmm. That could be fun, yeah.
Yeah, I've also been playing a lot of Civ 6 and Out of the Park Baseball 19, of course. Both are nice strategy games that are very text-based. I play FTL every so often. The only problem with FTL is that it's like you'll play for an hour, then get wiped out. in a game like that, you want shorter sessions. It's like there's so much investment in your ship. Then you reach the rebel fleet, and it's like, excuse me, they flick at you and you just blow up.
Yeah. Depending on what you've put together by the time you've gotten there.
I mean, I have the Borg ship now. I have the Engi ship, which is basically the Borg ship. Still not good enough. I need to get better ships than that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways. So we're going to move on to the gaming flashback, and this week's gaming flashback is Little Big Planet. Little Big Planet, commonly abbreviated as LBP, is a puzzle platform video game series created by Media Molecule and published by Sony on multiple PlayStation platforms. The series follows the adventures of Sackboy and has a large emphasis on gameplay rather than being story-driven. All the games in the series put a strong emphasis on user-generated content and are based on the series' tagline, play, create, and share. You know, I always thought Sackboy was always kind of vaguely dirty.
It had a story, but continue.
Well, no one cared about the story. The play they said it put a strong emphasis on the content rather than the story.
Right.
The game revolves around a player's control of the small character known as Sackboy in a variety of platforming scenarios. Though the game features a set of pre-built levels for the player to explore, the game's customizable nature is equally important, from altering the player's character and personal space to building entirely new objects and levels, then sharing and playing them online with other players as part of the Little Big Planet community. Sackboy can run and jump certain objects. Grabbable objects have the designation of being purely for mobility, such as swinging, or they can be pushed, pulled, switched, or operated in other manners. The player uses these abilities in several ways to play and explore the environments that come with the game, which feature platforming elements such as jumping, pushing, grabbing, and running, and which make use of the game's robust physics engine to create their own content, such as simply placing stickers in a level, or using the level editor to create, destroy, and edit, manipulate levels, and finally to share creations by publishing items such as levels and objects within the online community. And I'm going to say right now, you know what the first thing that people did was recreate Super Mario Brothers levels, and Sony said no, and took those off, which PO'd a lot of people. Although I wonder, you're playing Little Big Planet, and you want to play Super Mario? It's odd. The game begins with an introductory level, then go inside their own pod, a personal space from which they can access the three modes of gameplay, and decorate their room with stickers and decorations. Initially, only the play mode is available, and the player must complete the first area of the game and some tutorials narrated by Stephen Fry, who people will later recognize as the voice of Wheatley in Portal 2. Once the basics are mastered, the player is free to play the rest of the game. So yeah, the game was narrated by Stephen Fry, which is where the story came from. But the story was not the attraction of the game.
The story in Little Big Planet games has always been about as big as the story in Kirby games. It's there, but, you know.
The story in Little Big Planet 1 is this little potato guy stealing everybody, all the little creators that you complete each level, and then you see him, like, kidnapping someone and flying off with someone until you get to the final level where you have to fight him and release everything he's stolen. Yeah. And then, right. Of course, Little Big...
We wrote an article... I didn't write it. I think it was Jordan who wrote it for Game Stooge about how Media Molecule totally ripped off 9. Now, you may say, well, they started development of Little Big Planet before the movie 9 came out, but actually, the Oscar-nominated short came out long before about a month before Media Molecule started development. And
what's
you never saw 9? It was a Stitch Punk movie. They
it was
made
a what?
You have never seen 9. It is a wonderfully depressing film about these little sack creatures who survived after humanity has killed themselves off, and they have to deal with... It's truly horrifying for a kid's film.
That doesn't sound anything like Little Big Planet,
but
go on.
Oh, God, it is. It is down to the very last thing.
You're going
to
need more than that Sackboy.
Trust me, we know that they completely ripped off Sackboy from 9. It's not even they just altered Sackboy to be squat
it's
and
a sock
fat.
With a face.
What?
It's a little sock with a face. That's not really
yes, and that's what 9 was. Little socks with faces, except they were thinner. And they had buttons for eyes, and they had a zipper up the front. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, I think I did see 9, actually. I just forgot.
It
was a lot of green
for some
reason.
It was great, but also scared the living hell out of kids. You talk to a person in their 20s now, you mention 9 of them if they saw it, and they blanch like you just told them, yeah, you remember watching your cat get murdered?
I've played all 3 of the Little Big Planets, and they certainly they did more focus on the story, I think,
with
parts 2 and 3. But part 1 was definitely story light.
It had story, but the marketing for it was play, create, share.
Yeah.
And
they could do that, but unfortunately, there were so many copy levels. You would have a destroy the town level, do a race level, get 10,000 achievements in 5 seconds level, and a kill Justin Bieber level. It was, and you would just see them all over the damn place.
Yeah, you know,
the mechanic that really weirded me out in the game was the fact that you could slap. You could just like go, whoop. And you,
yeah, at the end of every level, everybody just hit each other.
Yeah, and it was like pointless. It didn't involve any puzzle solving. You didn't use it for puzzle solving. You just used it to smack each other, and I didn't like that because I would let Deirdre play, and all I hear was smack, smack, and I'm like, and I'll tell her to get out if people were hitting each other, because I didn't want her to play with people like that, and you know, I wanted her to play the game, and she loves still playing it. But, you know, I'm not going to let her
now,
play with people that just are going to go around smack each other.
Here's the problem, though. When you rely on user-created content, they don't seem to realize that the majority of people want crafted content by experts, you know? Rather than having other people do your work for you, it's better just to, you know, make your own stuff and make more of it.
There was excellent made fan made stuff, or at least non.
You can have that in any game. They're called mods. You know.
Yeah, there were good levels. It just was, there was a lot of crap too, unfortunately.
Like I said, you know, and there's a reason why you don't have Little Big Planet anymore, but you still have Mario after Mario after Mario. Even if it's just recycled crap, like the Wii Super Mario stuff, you know. It was just Super Mario, nothing much except new levels. But those new levels were professionally made by actual developers.
In they did introduce new stuff in Little Big Planet 2 and in Little Big Planet 3. In Little Big Planet 3, you get to be a flyer, and there's also this pair of giant and little guy, and then there was the little lizard where you can run across the ceilings and walls.
The little guy was like a dog that could run really, really, really fast.
The other problem with it is that I think Sony was more concerned about making a cute mascot for a Sony brand than actually making a game. But
I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I would say so. I would say that like the push, the share create thing was a big part of like, you know, get on the PlayStation Network so you can share levels with your friends and play with your friends. Enjoy everything that Little Big Planet has to offer. Because it was most definitely a marquee title for the PS3. That was sort of the hot item. It was one of the hot items for PS3.
Yeah.
My daughter still enjoys playing it.
They should have just stayed with Crash Bandicoot.
Eventually they did.
Unfortunately, Crash Bandicoot's coming to the Xbox One. So, yeah, the Insane Trilogy is coming to Xbox One, and I was shocked. I thought it was a first-party title, but it's not.
Yeah, I guess it's coming to Switch as well.
Yeah.
I think the concept of mascots needs to stop because it doesn't seem to be – they're trying to force it too hard, and it's just not working, you know?
At this point, there have been as many games made with the idea and the central concept of a mascot that suck as there are, in fact, there's a
mascot. You know, I was about ready for you to talk about Busby.
Bubsy. The Bobcat.
I remember Bubsy. I liked him.
And Blinks.
But I didn't think he was going to be a mascot for
Sony.
There's
also Blinks. And you know who's actually a good mascot? Unfortunately, the system died too quickly, and that was Bonk. For the Turbo.
Yeah, I remember Bonk.
That was Hudson Soft. Hudson Soft had had Bonk as their mascot, but eventually somebody else bought the rights to Hudson Soft, and then Bonk became abandonware.
Wasn't there was a island adventure with a guy in a grass skirt and a baseball cap and would throw little hatchets?
That was also Hudson Soft.
Right, exactly. And I just thought he was more prevalent than Bonk.
And Bonk got their mascot, but it wasn't the mascot they thought they were going to have.
Right? Yeah.
So it's got Master Chief as their mascot.
It was sort of a thing where Island Adventure was the American mascot and Bonk was the Japanese mascot, because they were very similar.
No, Bonk was
very
big
different.
Was with the TurboGrafx. Remember?
Yeah, but Bonk was never as big as
Bonk's Big Adventure, I believe it was called.
Yeah, but Bonk was never as big in America as he was in Japan.
Right, I agree.
I mean, well, the thing is that, you know, see, Nintendo got Mario as their mascot almost by accident. Remember, he was just Jumpman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody says, well, we have to have a mascot. We have to have a mascot because, look, Sega got Sonic as their mascot. So who are going to be our mascot? Microsoft tried heavily and Cameo and all these other things. They ended up with Master Chief as their mascot, which was a sort of like a curse. It was like a two-edged sword. While everybody loves Master Chief, he's not exactly cuddly.
No.
And Sonic and Sega, God, they kept on trying to find their mascot. They had Crash. They had Sackboy. They had
Nathan Drake.
I was about to say they even tried Nathan Drake, although, like I said, Nathan Drake's not cuddly.
And of course, there's the God of War.
God of War. Kratos.
Yeah, Kratos is not. Yeah, Kratos is awful.
Oh, he's not cuddly at all.
Just the opposite. He's Talkie Tina, basically. I wonder how many people know who Talkie Tina is. Yeah. Okay. For those you don't know, for the millennials out there who've never heard of. I think it was either Twilight Zone. It was Twilight Zone, not The Outer Limits. It was Twilight Zone, and it was basically what a Simpsons episode was based on. And it was about this this talking doll who kept on telling an abusive father, "I'm Talkie Tina, and I'm gonna kill you." Which
wow,
and well, you saw the parody of it on The Simpsons with the talking Krusty doll.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, mascots can't be forced, you know. They have to be, and even if it's the best game, I mean, people actually liked Blinks, but, you know, trying to make it, oh, God, that reminds me, remember the Noid had his own game?
Yeah.
Domino's mascot? Mm-hmm. Which, they did a smart idea, and they just took a good Japanese game and just slapped the Noid on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was... did they try to make into a mascot? Hey, listen.
Cool spot for 7-Up.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Gex. Everybody out there. Who is your favorite bad mascot? Failed
mascot.
Oh, my
mascot. God.
Who's your favorite
Scott just
failed
slayed
mascot?
Me with, Scott just slayed me with Gex. Talk about the word.
Oh, Gex. Yeah. Yeah, Gex. And the funniest thing about all these mascots was that they were all in the 90s.
And
so they
all
had to be 90s
edgy.
Cool.
And radical and extreme.
Yeah. Dex's entire character arc was, I don't want to go outside, I want to watch TV, and I also want to fuck.
I want to wear sunglasses at night, because I think I'm Tom Cruise.
Well, how about, I'm going to list off some of these guys. How about Awesome Possum? Do you remember him?
Not at all. I don't remember that one at all.
There was Dynamite Henny for this Genesis, who was a shrimp. A literal shrimp. Oh, wait. Actually, one good one was Earthworm Jim.
Earthworm Jim was awesome.
Yeah, and also Toe Jam and Earl, I guess. I don't know if they were mascots, but I know that Earthworm Jim was intended to be. And you know who almost became the... you know Nintendo really wanted to be the mascot for the Super Nintendo? I'll give you a guess. Guess who Nintendo really wanted to be their mascot for the Super Nintendo system?
Captain N?
Nope.
Oh.
Captain Falcon?
Nester?
Nope. Fox McCloud. Star Fox.
Oh, that sort of makes sense. I don't think he was ever going to be as big as some of the other stuff in Nintendo's, but he's...
Yeah.
No, that's who they wanted to be their mascot.
Yeah, because that was like one of the most important innovations of the Super Nintendo was to present a sort of pseudo 3D world in a game.
Yeah. In mode 7.
Now, how about Jazz Jackrabbit, who was basically basically Mario on the PC? No, he was Sonic on the PC. I'm sorry.
I don't think PC needs a mascot.
You have video game companies, though.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
How about Rocky Rodent?
That sounds like it's from Knockers Bad Fur Day.
Actually,
they did try to make a PC mascot that was actually, it actually sort of stuck for a while. It was Commander Keen.
Yeah, that was actually 3D Realms. And that was the story behind that. Well, it wasn't. I mean, it was. I'm sorry. Id Software. So the story behind that was that the guys from Id went up to Nintendo and said, "Hey, look, we can make a Super Mario for the PC," and they made a perfect Super Mario for the PC. Nintendo said no, and they said, "Well, we're not going to have wasted our time," and they just turned it into Commander Keen. And I still love Goodbye Galaxy as my favorite one.
Yeah. So that's sort of like. Arguably, that was like the 1990s PC mascot for a while.
Actually, you know who was Sega's unofficial mascot behind Sonic? And had Sonic not been the mascot, I'm really sure Ooh La La would have been the Sega mascot.
Well, she's in Sega All-Stars Racing.
Who cares? I always loved
it. I love that game.
I couldn't play it, but I loved it. Hey, you know what the best thing to do is just go to YouTube and just watch Space Channel 5, because you'll never be able to play it. Just watch someone else play it. Because after the first level, it becomes extremely difficult.
It's about a space news reporter who kills aliens with the power of rhythm.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean,
screw Parappa the Rapper. We have Ooh La La. I hated Parappa the Rapper.
I love Parappa the Rapper. And its lesser known follow up, MGM or Lammy.
Could you consider Yoshi a mascot?
Nah, yes. not over Mario. He's a subsidiary.
He's
subsidiary
with Mario, so he's like part of the mascot.
Well, what about Kirby then?
Kirby, I mean, yeah.
Sort actually, of. You know what? You know who is actually...
My wife certainly likes Yoshi more than Mario, so yeah.
Well, what about Donkey Kong himself?
King Kong, or Donkey
Not
Kong?
Not Diddy Kong, no, Donkey Kong.
I said Donkey Kong, I was just... Anyways.
Donkey Kong and Mario are essentially the Nintendo mascots. They've
yeah,
been
but
the
you know,
that...
Mario far surpassed Donkey Kong. I mean, what do you get? Donkey Kong Country? That's about it.
Everybody loves Donkey Kong. Like, most people I know love the Donkey Kong Country series.
It's beautiful music, yeah.
Yeah, but...
Beautiful graphics and really challenging.
Okay, you know, we're getting way off... we're getting way off topic here. So that's the question of the week. What was your favorite failed mascot? The mascot that they tried so hard to push on you and just fell flat.
Alex Kidd from the Sega. Because he was the mascot for a while, but then, like...
Sonic.
He wasn't cool enough, and so Sonic just like came in and everybody forgot who Alex Kidd was forever.
I would say Pitt, but Pitt was never popular. Yes, I
what
went there.
What do you mean, Ring?
I went there.
What do you mean to my Kid Icarus?
Well, it's guess Pitt. I could it's say... not Kid Icarus. It's Pitt. His name is Pitt.
I guess I could say Rayman, because he keeps coming back but doesn't seem to... catch on, but yet just keeps coming back.
And the games are always so good, too. Rayman Legends is awesome.
Yeah, but, you know, I think he is the mascot for Ubisoft anyway. I don't think he's a failed mascot. When you think of a mascot for Ubisoft, who do you think of? Altair? Really? Actually, if we're going to pick someone from Assassin's Creed, then you know it's going to be Ezio, but... I don't think Ezio is the mascot for I think it's still Rayman.
I'm going to go to Ubisoft's company website and see which character I see first.
Well, you're going to see...
Good idea.
I don't know. But you're not going to see a mascot like the ones we're talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ, while you're searching.
Oh, it's just a big old fucking banner of Far Cry 5. Anyways.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I would make the bear from Far Cry 5 the mascot.
Cheeseburger would make an awesome mascot.
Actually, you know, that reminds me. You know, Banjo-Kazooie, speaking of bears, is the mascot for Rare.
Yes.
And I know you're about to say, well, what about Conker? But Conker is a parody of a mascot. Although, you know, it's a tough choice. Conker or Banjo-Kazooie?
I would say Banjo-Kazooie.
I would say the singing poo.
That's exactly why I would say Banjo-Kazooie, is because you can't market Conker to kids anymore.
But you can market the singing poo.
Is too much poo attached to him, so to speak.
Anyways, game news, go ahead.
Alrighty. Before we move on, I do want to say that Cheeseburger would be the perfect mascot because he's a bear named Cheeseburger. That's all I have to say about that.
Do you actually get to feed him a cheeseburger in the game?
I don't know. That would be great, though. You can play D-Dust 2 and Far Cry Arcade from PC Gamer. Far Cry Arcade's map-making tools have already been put to good use. Mythic Counter-Strike map D-Dust 2 now exists in Far Cry Arcade's competitive multiplayer map pool. An impressive recreation by user Easily. Have a look for...
No, just ignore that. Just yeah. Say, well, you can't play the...
While you can't play the usual bomb-defusing objective mode, Team Deathmatch with Far Cry's showy arsenal turns D-Dust 2 into a much more lighthearted romp. Still, scream Rush B to your heart's content. Dust 2 just isn't the same without it. If you're away from your PC and want to try the map editor for yourself, you can save it for play later from any web browser. Just head to the Dust 2 level page, log in, hit the favorite icon. That's cool. And also, I understand that somebody made certain segments of Alan Wake in the Far Cry engine.
Yeah, and you know, if this was Sony, they would say, no, you can't have the Dust 2.
Mm-hmm. They would say you can't have all these other games that people are doing. Like I said, somebody literally recreated Alan Wake and Far Cry, and that's cool.
I played Counter-Strike a lot, and you know, I never really got into Dust 2. I always preferred Dust. I mean, why Dust 2?
Because that's the one that people play, like, in Counter-Strike Global Offensive all the time now.
Oh, okay. It's a pity.
Yeah.
But,
it's pretty much...
Go ahead.
That's pretty much really all there is to it. In the newest edition, it's a really, really popular map.
See, like I said before, if I get Far Cry 5, it's because of Far Cry Arcade that I want. I'll be getting it. Because I love making maps in Far Cry. Far Cry 2, I made my own base map, which either side was on the top of a mountain that you had to go up a winding road to get to. In the middle, there was a lake with two bridges. So you had all these options of what you wanted to try to do. But then once you got past, you still had to go up this you had to go up this mountain pass, constantly going up and up and up. So.
Yeah, and I mean, if you can do what people are talking about doing in the map editor, I mean, it kind of sounds like the sky's the limit. That sounds like a really immersive, it sounds like there's a lot of tools in it. It sounds like there's a lot of cool things you can do with it. And it might be, I'm not going to say it's the most comprehensive thing, but it might be the Mario Maker of shooters.
You know, this is in one case in which I wouldn't mind if they chopped up the game piecemeal and had Far Cry 5 and Far Cry Arcade be two different things. Like one is $40, the other one's $30.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, like, we've seen that things like Mario Maker sell no problem. And if people keep continuing to make things like this too, and Alan Wake and whatever else they decide to come up with, then that's a selling point.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where if you just let users do what they're going to do with it, they'll create the advertising for you.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Civ, which one was it? 4? Well, all the Civs did, but starting with Civ 4, when they started doing Steam, you know, Steam modding community, the Civ games have really skyrocketed because people just pumped out an incredible amount of mods for that game. And also games like Just Cause 3 and some, you know, of course Skyrim, but you know, I'm not thinking of the traditional RPGs. These are shooters and strategy games, you know, which are harder to find, not harder, but there's less modders for, cuz usually if you have an RPG or a simulation like The Sims, that's where all the modders flock to. But when you have games like, but here's the thing. Unreal Tournament taught me how to use Unreal Editor. And I made maps for that. You know, Heroes of Might and Magic, I made dozens of maps for, a lot of which are now on compilations, I think sold in Eastern Europe and Russia. I said, you can sell them. I don't need any credit. I don't need any money for it, but just so long as you make sure that I get the credit for making those maps.
Yeah, I mean, people love editors. I mean, one of the awesome selling points of the arguably one of the best RPGs of last year, which was Divinity Original Sin 2, was the fact that it had a DM mode in which you could take all of the assets of the game and create your own campaign and quests for you and your friends to play through. That is cool.
Civ 2 also had a map editor, and you could add a resource file where you can actually add units into the game that weren't originally in the game. So it was, I think, all the way back to Civ 2 for moddability.
I had the original Neverwinter. For those who don't know, the original Neverwinter was a C64 editor to make your own AD&D games. And what happens is that you could actually compile it and just send the disc off to someone, your floppy off to someone else as a full game that you could just, you know, play without needing the editor. There was also an adventure construction set and pinball construction set.
And if you like that Neverwinter thing, then I think you'd really enjoy the DM mode in Divinity.
See, that's what was lacking, I think, from a lot of games like Super Mario Maker. Because here's a question. If you could compile a level and just send it off to someone to play without needing the game, you know, just as a self-built, self-running level, I think a lot more people would be doing Super Mario Maker.
A lot of people did, though. I mean, it sold like gangbusters.
It fell off, though.
It took a long time for it to fall off. I mean, of course, it was going to be one of those things, because, like, once games age so much faster than any other media. The second a game is out for like 3 months, it's practically an old man. It's old enough to buy
that,
insurance
right and... now. RPG Maker.
Oh yeah.
And people are still making games for that and selling games with after using it.
Oh, yeah. I've bought DS games that were definitely built on RPG Maker assets, and to different and questionable degrees of quality, I will say.
Yeah, but the high-quality ones you see sold on Steam and do very well.
Yes. Yes, there are. There are some very good ones.
Because, you know, the RPG Maker stresses? It stresses story over everything else. Because I believe one of the best games, it wasn't Undertale, but it was another game which had almost no combat whatsoever. It was just talking and interacting and talking, interacting, you know, and that was the entire game. And it just got raves.
We have a second user question of the week. What's your favorite in-game editor?
For me? You know, for a long while it was Heroes of Might and Magic, but I have to say Far Cry 2, of the ones I've actually used. Because, you know, something in creating a realistic map than taking a Molotov cocktail and just throwing it and burning it. I mean, Unreal Editor was the one. Actually, I did levels for Duke Nukem 3D. But I'd have to say Far Cry 2, which is why, like I said, I'm interested in Far Cry 5, because it has the editor, they've improved it, and there's something rewarding about just, you know... the question is, which platform do I get it for? Because if it's an editor, I usually like to do it on my PC.
Mm-hmm. You
know? I might get it, but more people will play the levels, you know, if I distribute it on Xbox One. Although I think there is a way to sell both. I'm not sure. I'd have to find out.
What about you, Scott? What's your favorite in-game editor?
I think I would have to probably go with a SimCity one, because I liked building up a city and then just smashing it with disasters.
But that's the entire
disasters.
Game. I mean, doing one for a game like have you ever made levels for Civ, or have you made levels for Heroes of Might and Magic, or
I did like the Civ 4 level editor.
Oh, that's right.
That was pretty cool.
That's when they had... yeah, Civ 4 had the full-blown editor, too.
Yeah. They called it the World Builder, and you can build all sorts of scenarios and then save it and then have your friends play it. You can do, like, team island battles or whatever kind of scenario you want to do. And I think people made all sorts of maps for
it. And also, you could edit units and all that stuff, so you could have a Lord of the Rings thing and stuff like that. I only did maps, you know, but...
Yeah, I think that's where the mod Rise and Fall came from, where they did a, like you said, Lord of the Rings-type game where you had dragons and knights and all sorts of magical power stuff as opposed to technology.
The Civ 3 expansion included a Might and a Master of Magic, what's it called, game, which is cool. I still want to make my own visual novel, though. Maybe there's a lot of visual novel editors out there.
I have two answers.
I mean, Tom Hanks did play that idea in Big to be make your own comic book. I mean, that's pretty cool.
I won't make Doki Doki, but I will make something that is a little bit less, a little less
creepy.
No, something more serious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'll make it with Commander Shepard.
Maybe. somebody made an alien xenomorph dating sim. That was hilarious.
Actually, I have I kickstarted a card game in which you and a tentacle monster have to figure out a way to have the best sex possible.
That's weird.
But here's the thing. You're not allowed to talk. Everything you do, because it's an alien monster, you can't understand each other's language, so you have to communicate with body language and with looks on your face and all that stuff to coordinate.
Interesting.
it's not as perverted as you might think, although it's probably perverse just from the fact you're fooling around with an alien sex monster or a tentacle monster.
Right. But, so my favorite editor is
one that involves alien sex monsters.
Not quite. I already said one of the. I actually have two answers for this. One of them is Divinity. That DM mode is top notch. Like, and not only that, but like the Steam Workshop is jam packed full of stuff that people have put together for it. In case you're not finding what you want in the game's assets, because there were some things that were cut from Divinity Original Sin 2. And so some people have taken upon themselves to take those cut assets, build them up into working models, and put them back into the DM mode. And that's really awesome.
By the way, the name of the game is Sentical.
What's up, Scott?
I was saying to TJ, we need to play Divinity Original Sin 2, because I have that as well.
I have Divinity 2 on PC.
That's cool. We should do that then.
Yes. Because I hear it. I haven't had a chance to play a co-op, but every one of my friends says it's a really fun
Divinity
co-op.
Divinity 2 Developers Cut. I've had that it since 2013 and I've never even installed it.
Wow. Now, we are talking about Divinity Original Sin 2.
Right.
Which was the one that came out this last year.
Oh, okay. Well, I have Divinity 2 Director's Cut. Developers.
Which is also a good game.
The name of the game I was talking about with the alien sex is called Consentical.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Look at the Kickstarter page. It's actually.
I refuse. Yeah, I will not. I will absolutely not look at the Kickstarter page.
I mean, cards have things that say, you know, release, kiss, bite, stroke, envelop.
The other editor that I like is Soul Calibur 3.
TJ, save me.
The Soul Calibur 3's save character Soul. Editor is top notch.
Oh, I have the one that was, was it 4? Yeah, it was 4 that I had, and I really enjoyed creating my own character, although I used Sofita's moves because I used hers best.
Yeah.
Where I would be leaping on people's necks and snapping their neck with my thighs.
So, yeah, for those who don't know,
and Soul Calibur, starting with 3, and I think going on through all the rest of them, you could make your own character. You could dress them out however you wanted, and you could attach any one of the characters' movesets to them. And I always thought that was really rad.
And also, people made, you know, Superman and Wonder Woman and the Hulk and all that stuff with that, too.
And also, your clothes could get destroyed in an online match, and you would just be naked.
Yeah, that was the entire point of fighting Ivy. Miss Madam Boob herself.
Uh-huh.
The woman of the growing boobs. Every game has her breasts getting larger and larger and larger. Now it's eventually, like her bra is just straining in the one that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like trying to contain 2 expanding muffins. Anyways, that's a lot of questions of the week. Let's move on to the next item, okay? oh God, my browser crashed.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, I got it. Okay.
No Man's Sky coming to Xbox One later this year. This comes to us from Ars Technica. Hello Games' massive procedural space exploration sim No Man's Sky will come to the Xbox One later this year, following its summer 2016 launch on PC and PS4, the company announced this morning. And by this morning, we mean yesterday. The 505 Games published port, which will include 4K and HDR graphics support on Xbox One X, we'll follow what Hello Games founder Sean Murray calls by far our biggest update so far to the game, called No Man's Sky Next. Now, Hello Games isn't detailing what it specifically will be included in the upcoming free update due to launch this summer, save for a few screenshots. Next will be the 4th major post-loss update to No Man's Sky, which largely failed to live up to its galaxy-sized expectations at its 2016 launch. These post-launch updates, though, have rounded out the game with important features like base building, improved in-game photography, joint exploration, and expanded quote-unquote campaign story to help guide players through the near-limitless cosmos. No Man's Sky, which I call Elite Dangerous meets Spore. And by Spore, I mean in terms of expectations. We talked about Spore, and No Man's Sky was about as big a disappointment as Spore was. No small part to Sony hyping the thing beyond belief. It should have been a $20 indie game. It was not a $60 full release.
Yeah, I was on board from day one with that game. I reviewed it, and I've ranted on this podcast several times about how much I hate what I played. And, like, it wasn't that it wasn't fun to explore. It wasn't that it didn't have a lot of cool procedurally generated stuff. It wasn't that I didn't want to enjoy it. It was that the content notifications for things I should be doing as opposed to what I want to do grated on me to a point of insanity.
How about your achievements? Oh, you just got an achievement for walking 50,000 feet. Oh, you got an achievement for walking 50,010 feet. Oh, you got an achievement for walking 50,020 feet.
Not nearly as annoying as hearing that I need to have carb. I need to get more carbon every maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, where can I get carbon? Oh, yeah, everywhere. You could fart carbon out in that game.
Now, granted, a year and a half, two years later, I've heard from a bunch of people that went back to the game after all the patching, all the changes.
Well, I mean, 2 years when this patch comes out. I mean, a year and a half, yeah, for the most recent patch.
Right. I've heard a lot of people say after all the patching and all the changes they've made to it, it has finally become the game it was supposed to be. It has finally become a playable, fun, enjoyable game. I just don't know if I want to give it to Trevor. Yeah.
But the best part of this news is watching the comments from Sony fanboys. That's the most fun part of this news, acting like it's some big betrayal. You know, getting Mark of the Ninja now. Because here's the thing, Microsoft's ownership of Mark of the Ninja has expired. So now it's coming out on Switch and PS4. And I'm going to tell you something. If you want to play a really good stealth game, get Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah. Those guys make Clay. The development studio Clay Entertainment, also made. Yeah. Yeah, they made that. They made what was that other one?
It was a knife game.
Is that anything like the I might be getting the name wrong, but it was like something like Shadow Tactics, where you're this group of assassins, but it's like in an isometric.
It's a side-scrolling animated game in which you play as a ninja, and you can either go completely like brutal with it,
yeah,
and kill everyone, you can sneak your way through the levels and not touch anything.
Right. You can either play as a sneaky guy who never touches anything. As a matter of fact, one of the best parts of the game is that when you play a certain style, you can unlock things that help that style. For example, if you play sneaky ghost-like, you never make contact with anybody, you can unlock a suit in which you lose your sword, but you gain additional abilities and more slots. You can play as sneaky, never been touched. You can play as sneaky and brutal, violent, you know, you kill someone, then you remove their body so no one sees it. Or you can play as a terror, in which you kill people and deliberately hang up their bodies where others can see and panic.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of every level, you get points based on what you did. And one of the best things also is the best checkpoint system. You screw up, you just say, I'm going to go to a previous checkpoint. And the checkpoint isn't very far away. So these guys did Eats, they did Shank, they did Invisible Ink. They helped make Don't Starve Together.
Yes.
And also Torchlight, but yeah, too.
But yeah, I think the damage has been done to No Man's Sky at this point, but I also think that it's possible that it could discover new life on Xbox.
Yeah.
It's extremely possible that with all the changes they've made to it, it is finally the game that people wanted it to be. And I've heard good things about it since they've patched the crap out of it.
You know, it's funny that we're discussing No Man's Sky and Clay Entertainment, because they're coming out with a game that I saw last year at E3, which I am really looking forward to, and that's Griftlands.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be procedurally generated, and you play a space pirate.
Yes. It's going to be a turn-based combat RPG.
Yeah, so that I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, I mean, Clay has done a real lot of good stuff. I know you're a particular fan of Shank, TJ.
I do love Shank. I also love Don't Starve. Don't Starve is a really fun game.
I have Don't Starve. I haven't played it. I know what it's
I've played that game, and it is like walking on a knife's edge constantly. It's not a matter of if you'll die, it's a matter of when. When is it going to happen? Is it going to be some dogs that take you down? Is it going to be some random meteor strike? It's you're always on that knife's edge.
Uh-huh. Well, I've always liked the art style. The art style is so, like, I guess sort of like what's that one the Grim Tales,
or if you're thinking of card games, have you ever played Gloom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has that black and white hand pencil sort of aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Very grim. Yeah,
Grim Fairy Tales is the thing I was thinking of, which is basically all the fairy tales, but done with like horrible, horrible, dark black comedy notes to them.
You know, it was made at a time when there was a lot of survival games coming out. Like, I had The Long Dark, in which you play a guy who's stranded in the middle of winter, and your entire thing is just to survive and not freeze while watching out for wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
So, anyways, for me, No Man's Sky on Xbox One is going to be sort of a wait and see. Just see if it's not, if it doesn't suck. And if it's not boring.
Which, at this point, if you're looking for something that is just like a straight up chill, relaxed, I wouldn't say total walking simulator, but very,
it's the sort of game you play while listening to a podcast, basically.
Yeah. It's got a lot of beautiful visuals. I will say that was one of my favorite parts about it, is it was coming out of hyperspace and exploring systems and going into planets was really and always sort of breathtaking experience.
Yeah. Like I said, Mark of the Ninja. I mean, those of you on PlayStation who wonder what it was like and you didn't get it on PC, that is one of the best stealth games you'll ever play. And also, you know, actually, now that it also has the same sort of cel-shaded style as Don't Starve, except it's not, you know, it's not like Gloom. It's more like a cartoon, you know, or like an anime, but it still has that cel-shaded look. Actually, so did Shank, too. I think they like cel-shaded.
By the way, I found the Ubisoft mascot, and it's one that none of us even thought to say. We came close, but I can't believe none of us said it.
Oh, not Lara Croft. Oh, that's that would be Telltale. Oh, not Telltale.
Nope.
I mean,
Crystal Dynamics.
Who?
Crystal Knight. I think Crystal Dynamics handles Lara Croft now.
Knights?
Nope.
The character from Knights?
Nope. It's the fucking Rabbids from Rayman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but that's I think that's a failure. But that's like the Minions from Despicable Me.
No. Do you guys realize how much kids love the Rabbids? They love them enough that they put them in a Mario game, guys.
No, they can't.
It is like right here in front of me on the Ubisoft website.
You know where
website.
The Rabbids came from, right?
They came from Rayman.
Yeah.
But they like completely overshadowed him to the point where they just put out 10 shovelware games on the Wii.
I'd love to put the Rabbids in something like Rust, where you have to, you get points for killing the Rabbids in the most brutal, disgusting way possible.
Now,
them co-star in a Walking Dead game.
The Rabbids predate the Minions, by the way. So if you want something to blame for the Minions, it's the Rabbids.
No, actually, the Minions were basically ripoffs of the slugs from Flushed Away.
Now, you see, I can stand the Minions because I think the Minions are actual.
You must have. Well, you have a daughter. You must be able to.
No, she doesn't care about the Minions. The Minions have personalities. The Minions are little people. They have names. They have identities. Is what I'm trying to say. Where the Rabbids are just
what identity, Scott? What identity do Minions have except rando? Unfunny humor.
Well, I don't care if you don't like it, but they do have names. Like, there's a million of them, but each of them, like I said, has names. Like in that movie, the Minions movie, there was I can't remember them, okay? But
see, that's the problem. You can't remember them.
They
it was a movie
have
that came
names
out 2 years
and they
ago.
Did have identity.
Oh, what chaos I just by bringing up the rest.
I didn't remember the name of the Smurfs. I can't remember the name of the Minions.
I didn't say I liked it. I just said that I like them better than the Rabbids. There's a difference. The Rabbids, they don't have identity. They don't pretend to have identities.
I would love to see a game in which you have a minion and a rabbit in a violent death match.
They have goals. The Rabbids are just destruction. The Minions want to actually do something, whether it's good or not, is a different story.
Okay. You know, yeah, I will. No, I mean, like, they did make an entire game where you can shoot rabbits all day long, so...
They had the game of the Wii in which you had to torture rabbits, like, you had them, you know, you could...
I'm talking about Mario X Rabbits. You shoot rabbits in the game...
Yeah, you have to have a rabid teammate, so that there's no way it looks like you're doing some sort of genocide.
Yeah, okay, but I will say this. Mario Rabbids was actually a good game.
It was XCOM for babies.
Maybe. I mean, thematically, maybe. Yes. But that game, thematically, yes, but it actually played like an XCOM game. To the point where the guys from XCOM...
just scream. The Minions are actually talking to each other. I mean, sure, it's babble to us, but that's the language. The Rabbids, just like I said, they just scream. They point at you and you go, ah! And then they just... They're just annoying. Noxious.
So now, you're basically asking us to choose between obnoxious and annoying. Yeah, yes. Obnoxious. Annoying is annoying, but it's at least it's not obnoxious.
Y'all, Princess Peach Rabbit is pretty sassy.
Well, you know it's a cross-dressing rabbit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't put gender on them. They're just neutral. If anything's asexual neutral, it's them.
Oh, God. We've descended into discussing rabbits and minions, folks. This is how far low this podcast has gotten.
All I had to do to stir chaos was mention rabbits.
And you don't want to look at consensical.
My point exactly, TJ.
Consensical is a lot better discussion than rabbits and minions. At least the alien you're having sex with that has tentacles is cute, sort of.
Princess Peach Rabbit is pretty cute.
Don't you want to be enveloped by your boyfriend alien?
No.
No.
You know, it's one of those rare games which are specifically made for two players, too. I mean, most of the board games that are coming out are three players, and it's annoying sometimes. Oh, guess what? They hit stretch goal of having a comic book based on it.
Oh, my God.
Consentical of the comic book.
You know, one in girl, some circles, that's called alien. A hentai doujinshi.
You should see some of these cards.
That's what I would call it, too. I agree.
You know, you say you want one person to restrain and the other one to bite, you know, for the sex act. And if it matches, you get a heart, and you have to keep on building that trust.
Was this your Kickstarter, Jonah? Is that why you're pushing it so hard?
No. I backed it because it was a fun
looking
game.
Yeah, he is pushing this real hard.
Damn it, it's consentical. A game of human-alien intimacy. See, I can't press it because it already passed its goal a long time ago. I mean, the project was over a long time ago.
Hmm. If we're gonna push games, I'm gonna push Ni No Kuni too.
Well, it's an RPG, and it's better than the first one because the first one's story was, at least this one doesn't make you want to slap the protagonist in the face every 5 minutes.
Yeah, the protagonist.
You are a very violent person, cool. Jonah.
Not a heartfelt slap. Just a what are you thinking of slap?
I'm gonna tell you something about rabbits, Jonah. I'm gonna tell you something about rabbits, Jonah. That's gonna make you really probably upset.
What?
The XCOM makers actually admitted on record that they learned things that they're going to put into the next XCOM game from Mario Rabbids.
Yeah, that's okay. They're going to be target practice. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for hey, you know what? One of the mods for Left 4 Dead is, you know, instead of zombies, you have Barneys, and you just go...
No, I'm talking
you,
about
one,
like,
they
you.
Were like,
you have to kill them.
I'm telling you, they gave serious props to that game. They're like, this is something that we're going to have to study for our next XCOM.
Yeah, the problem with that game though is that I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but if you have whatever percentage it is, it's going to be that percentage. There are no hidden modifiers like there are in XCOM because you have the modifiers, but there are also some hidden modifier. One of the funny things is that they admitted that sometimes it'll show you that a shot will have a 35% chance of hitting when it's actually 75%. So that when you actually do it and you make the shot, you feel good because you beat the odds. But in reality, you had a 75% chance of hitting.
Meanwhile, sometimes you're sitting there with your gun barrel literally up the alien's nose.
Yeah, I've seen less and less of the 95% shot misses. Oh, I have a shotgun, a 95% shot, he's right next to me. Oh, I must have daydreamed for a moment because I missed. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. Just so you know, we're not going to record next week because I'm going to be at PAX East. I'm going to be PAXing it up. And they're going to have a new game that they haven't announced yet by Platinum Games.
Neat.
They also have video game adaptations of some board games like Scythe, which I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, there's going to be a new Platinum Games game, and I will let you all know about it when I get back.
It's definitely going to be Vanquish 2 and not Bayonetta 3.
It's actually going to be, because they're collaborating with someone else, it's going to be an original property.
Oh, cool.
I wonder if Dragon's Quest 11 will be there. Or shown there.
It's possible. I'm media there. I haven't gotten any notice from them, but for the major games, you tend not to get notices from them because they know people are going to be attracted to it. I mean, I get them from, you know. But yeah, I mean, a new Platinum Games game. My fantasy is it's going to be Bayonetta 2 and 3 being released on Xbox, but that's not going to happen. At the very least, maybe it'll be Bayonetta 2 and Bayonetta 3 on PC. Have to, you know, get that little that little compromise. Thank God for PC, which don't care about no console wars. Anyways, look for our show. Oh, I already said that. Anyways, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
I'm at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, play games, be cool, y'all.